Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, November 6th, 2008. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. Well, this week it's a catch-all show for interviews that Andy and I got in Denver when we went out to the Great American Beer Festival. Four interviews that I hope you'll enjoy as much as we did. If you're new to home brewing or would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And you can follow me on Twitter, my username, Basic Brewing. And that's all in one word, by the way. The 2009 Brewers Logbooks and the Introduction to Wine Kits DVDs are both here at the house, and they need to go somewhere else. Mayhaps to your house. Many of them have already flown the coop out to your homes, and I hope that trend continues. Thanks to everybody who's picked up a logbook or a DVD or two or three. Don't forget to tell your significant other to add some of our stuff to your Christmas wish list. Also, while I'm still in shameless plugging mode, if you do your Christmas shopping on Amazon.com, please don't forget to click on the Amazon Associate link on BasicBrewing.com before doing so. I continue to be amazed at the number of items that show up each week that were purchased through that link, and I appreciate everybody for your continued support. Shameless plugging section over. On to the content. If you'll remember last episode, I read an email from Andrew in Morrison, Colorado, who was contemplating how to approach the topic of home brewing when it comes to being a new parent. In other words, how to make sure that his child or children grow up to enjoy beer and alcohol in a responsible way, and how to communicate to his community, through his children, maybe. Well, I climbed up on my soapbox, if you'll remember, and gave my take on it, and some of you have contributed some feedback. And I'll read from what you sent, and I'll be paraphrasing a bit. Hope you don't mind. Chris from Creswick, Victoria, Australia wrote, or is that Kresik? I don't know. Chris wrote, "I thought I might jump up on your soapbox for a little bit with your permission." Well, of course. Chris says, "I'm a father of two, six-year-old and four-year-old, and I get in trouble from both of my kids if I do not involve them in my brew day. My six-year-old son likes looking through the refractometer, and my daughter is in charge of adding the yeast. So far, no beer infections. Fingers crossed. The kids are involved all the way through, and I really get a kick out of sharing this knowledge with them. When it's time to try a new keg, the kids get a bit of the froth, and we all have a little tasting session, quotation marks. Apart from being fun, I also use it to educate the kids on when beer can be good and when it can be bad. I'd like to think that my kids are going to grow up with a greater appreciation of beer and alcohol, for that matter, and as young adults will act responsibly." And Chris says, "As a side note, the new federal government earlier this year greatly increased taxes on Alka-Pops, pre-mixed drinks, as a measure against the increase in underage binge drinking in this country. It made homebrewers a little nervous, as many were expecting something similar on homebrew products, but that has not eventuated yet." Thanks, Chris. I often get notes from brewers who involve their kids in the brew day and use that time to connect with their sons and daughters. This comes from Roger in Lafayette, Colorado. "It's sad to hear that the schools are lumping alcohol in with other drugs. If beer is held in the child's mind as the same as the other drugs, but dad drinks beer because it's okay, this may lead the children to think that the other drugs are okay as well. This distinction is simple. Drugs are illegal. Alcohol is legal, but regulated until you're old enough to know better. The schools should make the same distinction." Thanks, Roger. And along those same lines of reasoning, if drinking beer is bad and dad drinks beer, is dad bad? Sounds like a Dr. Seuss book. Philip in Clinton, Mississippi writes, "I have a 4 and 11-year-old. My situation is slightly more complicated than yours, as I live in a state where homebrewing is illegal and am pursuing a calling to ministry. Yes, I know I must be insane," Philip says. My approach is multifaceted. I tell my older child not to talk about Daddy liking beer because some people will make assumptions, though if asked, I wouldn't want her to lie. I grew up with parents who set a high standard and a great example. That's very much my approach. My children will never see either parent abuse alcohol. My eldest is apparently being taught much of the same anti-alcohol curriculum as your 8-year-old, which, in my opinion, is a dangerous precedent to set. Alcohol is not equal to marijuana, which isn't equal to heroin. Lumping all together sets the same attitude toward all, which could be a very dangerous mindset. I've talked about these differences with my eldest child and will continue to do so. I often tell her there's a big difference between enjoying an alcoholic beverage and abusing an alcoholic beverage. I often equate it to a knife, car, or gun, all of which are very useful but very dangerous when abused. Philip says, I'm in no way against drug education in schools, but wish a more practical, honest approach were taken. My children will receive a much more thorough and proper education at home. Thanks, Philip. And that's the key. Talk to your kids. Aaron from Omaha, Nebraska writes, all of the teachers that my 3 kids have all know I'm a homebrewer. I've been asked by teachers to actually share my brews. I do so in a very discreet way. A backpack and a plastic bag with a sixer works well. And, you know, can't hurt the grades, in my opinion. Aaron says, I've been asked by many of the other parents about my craft and have found out a good many have made homebrews in the past. It actually has been beneficial because they have given me their old gear and even keg equipment. I feel the same way as you do, James, that we are responsible for being homebrewers. I tell people with concerns that I first am a responsible adult, a craftsman, a scientist, and well-suited, I think, father. I've always been very open to my kids about our craft and the fact that alcohol is not the devil. And Aaron says, for your listener concerns, be just like you have told them already. Don't hide it in any fashion. Matt from Aurora, Colorado writes, brewing beer touches on all sorts of subjects and could inspire your kids to enter the field of agriculture, biological sciences, business, history, or economics, to name a few. At worst, your kid might be inspired to tour breweries, Tom Brokaw sneaked in there, breweries through the U.S. and Europe while binging on great beer. The most probable is that you will raise a very educated and well-rounded beer connoisseur who will turn up his or her nose at the idea of consuming massive amounts of lagers or pilsners in college. Education leads to a better understanding and respect for beer and alcohol in general. And Matt says, this is comparable to fathers who teach their kids to hunt or fish. They are all valuable lessons and great opportunities for bonding with the kids. Matt says, I wish I'd learned more about brewing when I was a young kid growing up in St. Louis. I would have done science fair projects on brewing each year. Could have done projects on yeast life cycles, how hydrometers work, or cultivating hops instead of the boring solar system models. Probably those styrofoam balls with the toothpicks. Of course, your kids might not like beer or be interested at all. It will then be a challenge to love them, but they are still your children after all. Someday medical science will find a cure for the defects that prevent an otherwise healthy person from appreciating the aroma of ale dry hopped with Cascade. I think there's a gene involved there. And finally, this comes from Ryan in Rochester, Minnesota. Be responsible. Lead by example. I am completely open with my 6 and 3-year-olds about my hobby, and I explain about the process, the history, and the science. Many of the things I get from your shows. No pressure there. Hope everything's all right. my oldest likes to help me cap the beer. I also make soda with him. Well, there you go. And Ryan says what not to do. A coworker used to tell his kids that the beer was his medicine. His daughter liked to collect the caps. One day she brought her collection in for show and tell and said that this was from her daddy's medicine. Kids say the cutest things. Ryan says, oops. Yeah, talk to your kids and tell them the truth. Be accurate, because they tend to tell other people stuff. Well, thanks to everybody for your comments. I hope that Andrew can find some good nuggets of wisdom in there, and I hope that we didn't spend too much time on the soapbox. But, you know, I think it's important to talk about. But now, part of the fun of going to these beer events, like the Great American Beer Festival, is finding quick, interesting interviews along the way. And another part of the fun is trying to pull them together into some sort of theme around which to build an episode. Well, there is no common theme between all these interviews, other than their short chats with good, interesting folks. So that's why I'm calling this episode The Grab Bag. The first is with David Myers of Redstone Meadery. Of course, you've heard David several times on the show, and he's always fun to talk to. Andy and I caught up with David at the Back to Your Roots party associated with the GABF, celebrating mead. David Myers, welcome back to Basic Root. I've been here at the Mead Festival. Can you tell? Welcome back to the show, whatever it is.
No, real pleasure, James. We really enjoy having you come on by and having an opportunity to talk to you every year.
Now, once again, we are here at the Get Back to Your Roots party for the GABF. You are trying to shed light to the beer lovers that there was something before beer. Right.
You're right. We like to remind the brewers where they came from.
And tell us about the event once again.
Well, it's our Get Back to Your Roots. It is an industry-only gathering here at the Great American Beer Festival. We just about winding down from our seventh annual. And really what it is, of course, it gives us a great opportunity to feature our Redstone Meads to the brewing community. It also gives us an opportunity to have other meads from around the world that we manage to collect over the course of a year and bring them out and gives people a chance to just see how diverse mead as a beverage is, because most people think of mead as a very singular beverage, just kind of big, heavy, sweet, which it can be, but mead is very wide-ranging, and that's really what this party is about.
And anybody who comes to Boulder, Colorado, they need to stop by your tasting room, because if you want to see the diversity of mead, you can do that even just within your product line right there in the room.
Yeah, we've tried very hard not to only make a very tasty set of products, but a very educational set of products. So our products really run the gamut from 8% alcohol and carbonated to 12% and non-carbonated, an array of flavors. You know, most people don't realize that different honeys make different honey wine, just like different malts make different beers.
So we first talked to you back when we came to the GABF back in 2005, I believe. How has the world of mead shaped up since then?
Well, mead has been enjoying tremendous growth in the alcohol-consuming community. We've had the good fortune to grow year in and year out. We're currently available in 25 states, so probably when we first started chatting, it was probably more like 15. So we're seeing our production. And really just a general awareness about mead in general, I think, continues to grow on a year in and year out basis.
Well, it's wonderful stuff. One of the things that I discovered, tasted for the first time here, was the nectar of the hops. Kind of a bridge between meads and beer.
Yeah, it's certainly a great crossover product, and it's been a really successful product for us. Unfortunately, as I'm sure your listeners know, there's a huge hop shortage in the world, so we can't actually make as much of it as we could sell at this moment in time. But we brought this out. It released at the middle of December of 2007. It's pretty amazing because we mostly just sell it in our tasting room due to limited production. But starting in January of this year, it has been our number one bottle seller out of the tasting room every single month this year. Wow. It is nice. You can get it over the internet, so it is available on our website. But it is a dry hop version of our carbonated product. So, you know, instead of fruit, we dry hop it at the end. It's a 50-50 blend of Amarillo and Centennial hops. And for a 7-barrel batch, it runs anywhere from 22 to 28 pounds of pellets.
Fairly generous.
Fairly generous, but, you know, hops react differently with honey, so it actually, when you think about it, you're thinking it's going to be very over the top. Mm-hmm. But the fact is because we are balancing honey and working with honey versus malt, it really is not like this outrageously hoppy thing. It's just a very flavorful, great nose, great appreciation. And as I said, we've already had great response from the tasting room traffic that we get to the Nectar of the Hops product.
Yeah, it's something that, on the face of it, you think about it, you think that surely doesn't taste good, but it does. I mean, how did you get the idea to do that?
Well, it's actually funny. We had a head mead maker who's no longer with us, but within his first couple of days, he asked me, can I make an IPA mead? And I was like, well, no, but we could talk.
Thanks for asking.
But let's play around with hops and mead. And we, kind of on again, off again when we had time, would screw around a little bit, and eventually we developed Nectar of the Hops.
Another thing that I tasted at the tasting room, and I liked it well enough to take a bottle home, is the Sizer. And was that the one that you said that it was the last batch that you had a hand in making yourself?
It actually is the last thing that I physically made myself. Sizer is part of our reserve line, and our reserves are made once a year, different flavor every year, and strictly ready when I say they are. Typically about 3 years old on average before they come into the marketplace. And the Sizer is actually a blend of honey and apples. And in this case, we actually physically took the water out of the ingredients list and replaced it with 150 gallons of fresh pressed apple cider out of Paonia, Colorado. It's got over 800 pounds of honey in there. It's all fermented together. It was a beautiful day at the meadery because we had to slow heat apple cider. So the meadery smelled incredible between the apple cider and the honey all mixed in there while doing the pasteurization. And so it's a fabulous product. And in my opinion, I mean, it's drinkable now at 3 years old. It is going, actually, I guess it's 4 years old now. It is going, I think it's not even close to its peak yet. I think, that at 5, 6, 7, even 10 years old is going to be this phenomenal product. So I'm very excited to watch how it ages.
So are there any challenges that you can think of in making a Sizer that you can warn, home brewers about?
I always say I mead to me is the easiest fermented beverage to make. That's why I make it. But it's, the Sizer is really just finding a really quality apple cider or apple juice. It can be either one. Some nice honeys that will blend in with it. And I don't necessarily think there are any great tricks. I think it's just, like all meads, patience, patience, patience.
I told you that it reminded me of something. It reminds me of muscadine. Have you ever had muscadine grapes? Wild grapes?
I have not. So I'd be curious, especially to have a grape flavor kind of being similar to an apple. I'm sure that'd be very interesting.
I don't know. It hit me. Andy and I were tasting it in the tasting room, and you know how it goes. That little note was bugging me in the back of my mind. I said, what is this? I've tasted this before, and it tastes a lot like muscadine, which is a positive thing.
Yeah, no, I'll have to look for some of that to actually have an opportunity to sample. I'd be very curious to see the comparisons.
Well, thanks again, David. This is wonderful, and we wish you continued success.
No, we really appreciate you coming out, giving us the support. If people weren't coming out to it, we wouldn't have any business throwing the party year in and year out. And we just have a lot of fun. We love being around the brewers, and we love being with the JABF.
As I said, it's always fun to talk to David. And Mead could not ask for a better ambassador, I think. At the same event, Andy Sparks and I ran into a home brewer who was taking part in the GABF's Pro-Am competition. This year, there were 58 entries into the Pro-Am event, becoming quite popular. And of course, that's the event where professional brewers pair with home brewers and brew the home brewers' award-winning recipes on the professional system. We caught up with David Schollmeyer of Chandler, Arizona, who was entered with the Papago Brewery in Scottsdale. Tell me about your beer and how you became the Pro-Am candidate.
Okay. It's a kind of a Chimay-inspired beer, Chimay Grand Reserve. That's one of my favorite beers. And I had the idea of brewing I got from Randy Mosher's Radical Brewing book. I wanted to brew with peel and CO sugar. So I thought that'd be kind of a great combo with a Belgian strong dark ale. So I brewed that November of last year, and entered it in the Great Arizona Beer Festival, and it won a gold there in the Belgian Strong Ale. And then Papago Brewery was doing, they actually, for the past 3 years since they started the Pro-Am competition, they've entered every year, because the owner there, Ron Cloth, is he's very involved in our homebrew club, the Arizona Society of Homebrewers. And so he's always kind of been supportive of the homebrew community in Arizona. And he, we entered the beers. He basically said, submit beers, and then he did a tasting of them, and he picked my beer to brew. So,
wow.
And we brewed a 7-barrel batch, it's about 210 gallons or so. And we got about 11 half-barrel kegs out of it.
11, 12.
So for those not familiar with that type of sugar, tell us about that.
Well, it's a kind of a Mexican unrefined sugar. They partially refine it, and then it's poured into cone-shaped molds. And then it's got more of a kind of a molasses character to it. So a little bit of molasses, so you get a little bit of that in the nose with the kind of the fruity esters. And I did some with the yeast, trying to. I started at around 68 degrees and then let the fermentation temperature ramp up. I got that from Brew Like a Monk, Stan Hieronymus. That's kind of his, I guess that's what a lot of the Trappist breweries will do, to kind of get the, so you start low so you don't get a lot of the hot fusel alcohols, and then you just let the temperature ramp to get some more of the fruit and the yeast characters as the temperature, and then you get more attenuation that way as well.
Yeah, we hear that a lot from professional brewers and home brewers as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it worked really well. My homebrew version was a little bit drier than the one that came out with the Pro-Am beer. It was a little bit sweeter. It's not too sweet. I mean, it's kind of in line with, say, a Castile Dunkel, I think. Mm-hmm. So when we tapped it at Papago, we actually pulled some Chimay and we pulled the Castile and kind of did a side-by-side taste. You know, it was kind of fun.
So how did you treat the sugar? I mean, it was in these cones, so mm-hmm. how did you get it into the brew pot, and when did you add it into the additions?
Well, we added the sugar, actually. Coming out of the mash tun, they had a grant. We put the sugar directly in the grant and let it. When I did a homebrew, I just, put the sugar in while I was running out of the mash tun into the boil kettle, and then just, stirring till it dissolved. It mostly dissolved by the time the runoff was done from the mash.
So the sugar was in the boil for the whole time?
Yeah, it was in at the beginning of the boil.
Did you notice a caramelization of the sugar during that time, or between? I don't know if there's any way that you could tell from, but was there a darker taste from the sugar in the finished wort than in the original sugar?
Yeah, I wouldn't really know. That sugar, since it's unrefined, you already have kind of, some of the molasses and dark, caramel flavors already in that sugar. So I don't know if I could really tell between if kettle caramelization or not from that.
So what have you learned in brewing that beer yourself and then seeing it brewed on the professional scale? What are the comparing and contrasting?
Brewing commercially with it was just the larger scale. It really wasn't that much different than what I do at home. So that was kind of interesting that, you think, professional brewer has all kinds of probably tricks that they do to brew professionally, but no, it was pretty much exactly what I do at home, but we'd brewed 200 gallons instead of 10.
They just have bigger toys.
Yes, yeah, a bunch bigger toys.
Well, Andy, is there anything I'm missing out here? Is there anything that you want to ask?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, we talked earlier, basically, what was your strategy when you went to try to get into this contest? Why did you pick the Chimay clone? Was that because you didn't expect anybody else to do that? What were your strategies when you're trying? Because I know a lot of people come to us with, I want to enter contest, but I want to do well. How can I, pigeonhole myself to get in and be a contender?
Well, this brew, I didn't really brew. And, for this specific entry into this contest, it was more, I'm a big fan of Chimay Blue. That's one of my favorite beers, so I wanted to brew something similar. Actually, when I bottled it, I did the full 750 mils with the crown corks and caps and everything, so crown caps. So that was more for that. Really, the main reason I went into the contest because I wanted to come to JBF, and that was part of the award of winning the contest. That's the main reason I put this beer in, mainly because, they wanted, it had to be, the rules of the Pro-Am is it has to be an AHA brewed beer that has won an AHA competition, sanctioned competition. So, and this was what I had on hand, and so.
and you've gotten some kind of special privileges while you've been here.
Yeah, well, Ron knows a lot of people in the industry. He knows all, like, Vinny from Russian River. He knows Tommy from Lost Abbey. So with the brewer's badge, which I was able to get for this, for coming here, I was able to go behind the booth and take directly off the tap. I had some consecration, supplication, temptation, all, you know, just walk behind the booth and get what I want. I didn't have to stand in line, so that was pretty nice.
So did it hurt when everybody who was lined up for miles, when they stared holes in you when you were doing that, did that hurt?
No. I didn't pay attention to them. I was paying attention to the beer and getting what I wanted to try.
Yeah. Yeah, those evil thoughts going your way didn't...
I did stand in line for New Glarus. The festival opened at 5:30. I got in line about 5:25. There were about 40 people in front of me already. But I went through the line three times just to make sure I could get the Belgian Red, the Raspberry Tart, and the Blender Weiss. So those are very good beers, and I see why everyone stands in line for those and see why the Red wins every year.
Well, congratulations, Dave, and good luck on the rest of the competition.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm a big fan. Been listening probably for about 2 years at least since you.
So you can give part of your credit, the credit to this podcast.
Definitely, I've learned a lot on definitely on Basic Brewing. It's been a lot of help.
There's your celebrity endorsement right there.
Don't call me a celebrity. We'll see if I win.
Then you
can call me a celebrity.
There you go. Thanks, David.
Thank you.
I was actually being sarcastic there at the end. Not digging for a compliment, but it was nice of David to say that. And congratulations to David for making it to the Great American Beer Festival. Good luck next year as well. Andy and I also ran into a good friend of the show, Maureen Ogle, author of Ambitious Brew, The Story of American Beer. Maureen was signing copies of her books on the floor of the Great American Beer Festival, and we took a couple minutes to talk about the state of craft beer today.
Well, Maureen, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio. It's good to see you in person.
It's great to see you, both of you. It's nice to see you in the flesh instead of just talking to you on the phone. Glad to be here in Denver with you.
Now, here we are in the midst of the Great American Beer Festival, and your book is all about American beer. So what are your observations? What's going on nowadays in the industry? How is it shaping up?
I think two major things are going to happen and happen pretty fast. One has to do with the fact that the economy is falling through a hole and we don't know where it's going to land. And prices for everything, fuel, hops, barley, everything has gone through the roof. And my guess is there will be what I think economists call attrition in the industry. I think some of these small brewers will not make it at all. Between the high prices for materials and the fact that people don't have a lot of disposable income at their disposal right now, they're going to get hammered. But what's also going to hurt them is that both Miller Coors and Anheuser-Busch InBev are going to go at each other. We're going to see a beer battle of the sort that has not been seen since the 1970s when Miller Brewing and Anheuser-Busch went at it. Miller Coors is now one company in North America, and they are in the process of very much streamlining their operations. They're streamlining everything. They are cutting costs like crazy. They are trying to eliminate distributors. They are stripping things down to the bare bone in anticipation of this battle. The same thing is happening at Anheuser-Busch. InBev is famous for being a cost-cutting operation. So I think these two companies are going to go for maximum efficiency, and they're going to be maximizing their efforts to get consumers. So I think there's just going to be a big war followed by a lot of fallout among craft brewers.
And in addition to the woes that are happening for the craft brewers, is the fact that with the credit crunch, even if they wanted to expand, maybe they couldn't get the money to expand.
They will not be able to get money. That's exactly right. And a lot of these, of the larger craft brewers and the regional craft brewers, many of them had been launching expansion campaigns, and it's not clear what's going to happen to those if they don't have the financing locked up now. Or if they were planning on sort of spreading the financing out, they're not going to be able to get any money. And it's not because they're bad guys. That's not it at all. I mean, we're all going to feel this in a major way. And so, yes, if you love your local brewer, go drink local beer, which, by the way, is also a great thing to do for the environment, right? I mean, try to drink a beer that's close at hand. There's a lot of ways we can all keep this important industry going, but sadly, whatever we try to do may not be enough. I just think there's going to be a tremendous amount of upheaval real soon.
And another factor is the fact that we're seeing craftier beers coming from the big guys. You know, we're seeing giant signs everywhere for the new American Ale from Budweiser. So how do you see that affecting everything?
Well, Miller and Coors both in the late 1980s went after the craft segment, and they were both remarkably successful. They've had a lot of consistent success, and they have both, since the merger, started up new craft brewing labs in their big breweries with the intention of going deeper into the market, and I think they will be successful. They understand this market. Anheuser-Busch has not been able to follow through. In the late 80s, early 90s, they sort of made a half-baked attempt at the craft segment and then just let it go, and now they're going to try to do it again. And I don't know how that's going to work, in part because it's not clear if InBev is going to support that. InBev wanted Budweiser. It didn't necessarily want these craft beers like the American Ale, which is actually being officially launched tomorrow, which for everybody who's listening, this will be later, is October 10th or whatever, Friday. Obviously, that project was started before InBev came knocking, and it's really not clear to me how the acquisition, assuming it goes through, will end up affecting that. You know, if AB, back in the old days, AB would just sort of launch, you know, aim, fire, and destroy, and they have not been able to do that in craft brewing, and I don't know. Miller Coors, I feel, is probably going to do some damage to the craft brewers because they get the market because they've been in it a while.
And if in this environment, if they can add another AB beer tap handle, that is another tap handle that won't be a smaller brewer if they even had that real estate to begin with.
That's right. In times like this, the tavern owners are the ones who are also going to be feeling the crunch. They're not going to be able necessarily to support a lot of craft brew tap heads. Although from their perspective, it's more profitable for them. It's also true for the distributors. If you're a distributor, you'd really rather have a case of a craft beer than a case of Budweiser because you actually make more profit on it. Here's one thing that I do think is going to happen. I guess I should have said this a while back. I do think that both Miller Coors and AB will end up trying to buy outright some of the larger craft brewers who are probably going to start feeling this credit crunch. So I think there's going to be a lot of acquisitions sometime in the next 2 years. There'll be small brewers that just won't make it, and others will end up selling. And, of course, that just gives AB and Miller Coors more clout in the marketplace.
Now, on the potential positive side,
if
there's a product like American Ale that can start taking some of these hardcore, you know, yellow beer drinkers and start modifying their tastes a bit, then maybe that could be a foothold into them starting to think about these other beers that they see on the shelf.
That's right. In that respect, I think both Miller Coors and AB have an extraordinary opportunity right now because I think that's really been the rationale for Anheuser-Busch behind this new American Ale that it's launching. They really want to try to take their intensely loyal Bud fans, and Bud fans are, you know, you think craft brewers are loyal, Bud fans are really loyal, and they are, in fact, going to try to start teaching them to go after something different. So I think that, and if you put the power of a huge giant like that behind craft beer, that's good for everybody. In the same way that Starbucks, for example, has been great for coffee. You know, people think that Starbucks just runs around running the competition out of business. It doesn't. Wherever Starbucks goes, mom and pop coffee shops actually do better because people sort of learn how to drink coffee at Starbucks, and then they're willing to go to their neighborhood coffee shop that's locally owned. So there is an upside to all this, yes.
So maybe we should end there on an upside?
I think we should, yes. Especially, you know, things are not going well in this country right now. Yeah, let's end on a positive note. That's a great idea. Yeah.
Thanks, Maureen.
Hey, thank you. It's great to see both of you again. Thanks a lot.
And the book is out in paperback.
It is, and man, it's dirt cheap on Amazon, so hey, if you want to buy cheap Christmas presents, go buy that book.
Awesome.
Well, it was good to talk to Maureen again. We even got to have lunch with Maureen at the Great American Beer Festival press event. So while I hope that Maureen is wrong, I suspect that she may be right. So now is the time to support your local brewery and the craft beer that we all love. But to get another perspective on the situation, to be fair, and dare I say balanced, we talked to one of the most vocal cheerleaders for craft beer, Greg Cook of Stone Brewing Company. Well, Greg, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
And I was talking to Maureen Ogle last night on the floor of GABF, and she was saying that among all the small brewers that are there, some aren't going to be back next year because of the tough economic conditions, you know, with the grain prices, hop prices, and, you know, the way the crazy stock market is going on, the credit crunch. Right. It's going to be tough. How are you as a craft brewer facing that?
Well, for us, it's actually not currently an issue. I believe that it doesn't matter what business you're in, especially if you're on the artisanal side of the equation, the non-commodity side, which clearly we are and the vast majority of craft brewers are, it's more about the quality of how you hit the road. So the quality of your beers, the quality of the way that you present your beers, the quality of the way that if you have a restaurant that you run your restaurant, and the quality of the food that you serve, and the experience that you're able to give, and the quality of your business practices, all the way down the line. And if you have a great quality business that is balanced with all these things, you can weather some tougher times. You're well poised to do it. If your model or your practices were already a little bit on the shaky ground, then you might end up on shakier ground when everything around you is shaky.
But when you started out, I'm sure that you were having some tough times, maybe. Or maybe you had a golden time and kind of got lucky. But, you know,
the opposite. Yeah.
New businesses are fragile. You know, when the ingredient prices go up, and maybe even if you're having success and, you know, now with the credit market the way it is, if you want to expand your brewery, maybe you can't get the money anymore. I mean, what advice do you have for newer, smaller breweries?
Well, you know, when we opened up in 1996, was the first major pullback in the growth curve of craft breweries in the United States. Growth in the early 90s had been meteoric, and in 1996, when we opened up, it was like buying at the top of the stock market, and everything was just falling apart. So we learned from the very beginning to be lean, and it was extraordinarily difficult for us. There were times where we sincerely didn't think that we were going to make it. We were bleeding money. The consumerism, the volume of the consumer buying of craft beers and local craft beers, especially in our region, just was not up to snuff. We had to create our own world, and it took a lot of time, and it took a lot of resources to do it. What was the second part of the question then?
Well, with the credit crunch, I mean,
if
you want to expand, if you're having success and you want to expand, maybe not, you know, you won't have the ability to get the money to do that.
Right. Well, for craft brewers, there's rarely ever been a period where money has been available. You know, companies historically, it's that old catch-22. You can't borrow money until you don't need it. You know, you've got to, that's that thing. And the reality is that we couldn't get financing early on. From any traditional financing sources, because they simply don't do. You have to have a track record. You have to have a long track record and your tax returns. You know, they want to see that they've got a very, very, very low chance of losing their money. Well, in theory, and I guess unless it's a mortgage or something on a house, and then in which case they can operate in rather questionable behavior patterns. But and we're chuckling, but it ain't funny either, is it?
Yeah, it's more nervousness that I'm chuckling. But so you're saying that that it's always been tough for craft brewers in that way.
It's always been tough for startup entrepreneurs of any category. You know, there's every once in a while, it's the rarity of when you've got that flash in the pan availability of capital. And you know, say the dot-com industry saw it in the late 90s. But for the most of us, you know, the people that actually have our feet connected to this planet, it's not the reality. And so you've got to find some other way. You've got to go in and scrimp and save and be lean. And I think it's going to be a little bit challenging for those who maybe started in the early, middle 2000s when things were a little bit greener for craft brewing. You could open up a brewery again, just like the early 90s, and maybe have a chance of success, even though you're, you know, what you were doing maybe didn't fully merit all the success that you were having. So, you know, I wish, what, my perfect world, every craft brewer that opens up makes amazing beer. They have a great business model. I don't consider it competition. I consider it elevation of our world. You know, we have at our restaurant, we have 32 tap handles. 8 to 10 might be stone on any given at any given moment. The rest are guest beers. Of course, zero fizzy yellow, as anybody that knows me would know. So it's, you know, we love sharing this and sharing great craft beers from a variety of brewers with, you know, with each other. It's that's part of one of the beauties of this.
Well, speaking of tap handles, Anheuser-Busch is coming out with their American Ale, which is kind of a craftier style beer than their regular Budweiser. So that's even more pressure on guys like you.
And, no, it's not.
Is it not?
Well, you remember Vanilla Ice? You know, that ice baby, all that? Okay. We know. No, nobody wants to admit it. But, yeah, we of course, we know. We remember Vanilla Ice. Okay. So what did you think of his heavy metal album that he came out with a few years ago?
Well, I preferred... what's the Pat Boone's rap album?
Yeah.
But, you know.
So what I'm getting at is it's irrelevant. It's not my world. I don't care. I'm unimpressed. You know, it's for those who want to go and buy Vanilla Ice's new heavy metal album, fine. But I'm more interested, you know, checking out what I think of the new Metallica personally. You know, hey, everybody's got their tastes. I think that if some people, you know, they personally, they enjoy being led by the nose by their television. Most people, they're statistically safe. They've got the masses behind them. Hey, if you like to be led by the nose, you've got billions on your side. If you like to be, you know, make your own decisions and get into the creative side of the world, hey, you don't have that. You've got to search out your friends and compatriots in this world to enjoy that with you. But, of course, it's a richer experience.
Well, you're preaching to the choir.
Yes, so. I know that I am, but I still like to say it because you know what? It feels a little fiery. And it, just kind of pointing out, hey, I don't care about Britney Spears' new album. I'm not interested. She's not taking away from my sales. I'm being euphemistic here, but it just doesn't matter to me.
Well, do you think in some way that that beer would sort of try to, you know, start to widen the taste buds of Budweiser drinkers?
Oh, well, you know, here's the thing. Here's my analogy. If you're into great jazz, like the classics, really amazing jazz, how do you get people into great jazz? With Kenny G? No. You get people into great jazz with great jazz. How do you get people into great beers, these phenomenal craft beers that are out there? Use phenomenal craft beers. Don't use the Kenny G or Michael Bolton's or whatever kind of equivalent you might want to give. Don't use those. It's you're wasting somebody's time and you're discounting. I've seen so many people discount their friends. Oh, I can handle a great craft beer, but my friend, I think that they might have. So I'm gonna give them the Kenny G version. And frankly, I don't think it's fair to their friend.
Excellent. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, pleasure.
Congratulations on your success.
Yeah, it's a good time.
The Kenny G of craft beer. I think that's a tagline. Greg really know how he knows how to cut down right straight to the bone there, straight to the chase. It will be interesting to see in the coming months and years how the industry evolves as we grapple with these tough economic times. Once again, support your favorite craft breweries. We got one more episode to come from our travels in Colorado, a beer dinner with the Brett Pack. And that will be coming up in a couple of weeks. Remember, we've got the Brewer's Logbook and our new Basic Winemaking Introduction to Wine Kits DVD out there on our online store. Both make excellent Christmas gifts. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com. Or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. You can check out our other DVDs, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, on basicbrewing.com. That's where Steve does a single-step decoction mash, and I do a lager fermentation where I don't use a dedicated chest freezer. There are also our other DVDs. Introduction to Extract Home Brewing, where we walk you through the extract process, and Stepping into All Grain, where we take you through the all grain process, all the way from milling your grain to collecting your wort. And we got combo deals and a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order it, all of our stuff online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. We've got the shirts, different colors, and also, as I said in the beginning, thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are The Book of Vice, Very Naughty Things, and How to Do Them. That's the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me guy, I think. And Slim Guide Skin Fold Caliper with Booklet. I had to look that up to see what that is. I probably need one. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we appreciate your support. We also have an associate link to the Apple Store on the site. That's all until next week. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson, our buddy down in Austin. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.